Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. The pandemic is upending Thanksgiving traditions, and many of us are heeding public health recommendations to skip the traditional multi-household gatherings, instead connecting with family via Zoom. Later on in the show, we'll talk about some of the stresses of a pandemic Thanksgiving, from dealing with relatives who might not be taking COVID as seriously as you are, to having uncomfortable political conversations in a digital format. We'll also talk with a food writer and podcaster about downsizing the big dinner. But first, I'm really excited about today's Monday Reporters Roundtable. Bernard Schoenberg and Doug Finke have been covering state government for Springfield's State Journal Register newspaper for decades. Bernie started covering the State House at the end of the session in 1977 for the Pantograph in Bloomington. He spent a decade there and a few years with the AP in Chicago before moving to the SJR, where he's been political writer and columnist since 1992. Doug started covering the State House in the last year or so of the Thompson administration in the late 80s. He'd been at the paper for about a decade before that, and he's written or co-written the State House Insider column for much of that time. I first met them as an intern in the SJR's Capitol Bureau almost 16 years ago, and have worked alongside them ever since, both as a member of the State House Press Corps and for a few years as a colleague at the SJR. It's been an education. In Bernie, I saw the importance of tenacity and fairness and just showing up because, as he says, you never know what you're going to get. From Doug, there was always the gimlet eye remaining skeptical about the motives of politicians and remaining fresh to the absurdities of state government. Bernie and Doug are both retiring at the end of the month, and it's a real honor to welcome them here. Thanks for coming on the show, guys.
Glad to be here.
Nice to be here. Yeah.
Before we take a walk down memory lane, Doug, I want to start briefly with current events. Last week on the show, we talked about federal prosecutors inching closer to House Speaker and Democratic Party Chairman Michael Madigan. They charged a longtime friend and confidant, as well as several executives from the electric utility ComEd, with conspiracy to influence him. Madigan has not been charged. He's denied any illegality. But there's a growing threat to his power. And what happened at the end of the week is Madigan kind of made his position clear. Can you update us? Where does he stand right now, Doug?
He stands right where he has for decades now. He says he has a majority, or the support of a majority of the House Democrats. And it's his intention to run for another term and speaker in January when new lawmakers are sworn into office. We'll have to see how that works, because as of last week, there were 18 House Democrats who have gone on the record saying they cannot support Madigan for another term as Speaker. That would put him below the 60 that he would need to get reelected. So apparently he is planning to try to coerce some additional support out of those 18 who have said right now that they won't support him again.
And in case anyone out there is sort of new to Illinois, Madigan has been speaker for all but 2 years since 1983. That predates both of your tenure covering state government. So I mean, you've never, aside for those 2 years in the 90s, you've never covered a state government that did not have Speaker Madigan in power. Bernie, I mean, this is not the first time Madigan has been on the ropes, though, right?
Well, he was in trouble a little over the Me Too movement a few years ago. Maybe it's a couple years ago, when allegations came out, you know, from Elena Hampton, a former campaign staffer and maybe state staffer, saying that, you know, there had been some harassment within the Madigan ranks. And he, you know, basically said, did some mea culpas, appeared at the State House to talk about it significantly, said that he hadn't done enough and he was going to make changes. So he tried to move that forward. By the way, just one thing, I remember I came in under Speaker Bill Redmond. So I remember when Madigan was just one of those really smart guys on the floor, maybe even the leader on his side. But
fair enough. I was thinking of the State Journal Register. But yes, yes, you were in the State House in the late 70s. So you can envision, which many people cannot, a House Democratic organization without Madigan at the top of it, I guess.
Difficult, because we don't know who the heir apparent is.
Yeah, and that promises to be a big fight. All right. The reason I really wanted to have you on is you're both retiring at the end of the month. You've taken buyouts from Gannett, formerly Gatehouse, which at one time was Copley, which publishes the State Journal Register. But I really just want to sort of take a look back at your time covering state government. Bernie, and I'm going to start with you. Your entire career spans that of a certain state senator from the south side of Chicago. Of course, I'm talking about former President Barack Obama. But it wasn't always clear to you that he was destined for this kind of political superstardom, right? Can you talk about covering that news conference in 2003 at the Illinois Federation of Teachers?
Well, it was pretty funny because it was a busy legislative day. And as Doug will tell you, while people like him were at the State House doing the serious work of covering day-to-day events, in my columnist role, I spent more time just kind of wandering around and looking for something interesting. But there was an announcement that morning, midweek, while the legislature was in session, that please come to the Illinois Federation of Teachers headquarters, which is a few blocks from the Capitol, because we're going to endorse Barack Obama, for who was a state senator for United States Senate. He was not considered the likely candidate, I don't think. There were people like Dan Hines who were in the running. But I went, and it turned out I was the only one there. And, you know, the head of the Federation of Teachers gave a little talk or said something, or maybe just introduced Senator Obama. He talked. It was funny because not long before that, there were many people on both sides of the aisle running for United States Senate that year. And one of the Republicans had been asked at a State House news conference if he ever used illegal drugs, and had said he'd used marijuana in college, but didn't like it. I believe that was Steve Rauschenberger, a former state senator from Elgin. And I thought it only fair to ask the other candidates, at least in turn, if they had done so. So I asked Senator Obama that, and he admitted to using some, this was afterwards, like in the hallway at the IFT, he admitted to using some marijuana in high school. And I put that as just one of the items in a multi-item column after that. Somebody told me to read Dreams from My Father or look it up, which was not yet reprinted, but he had written after his time at Harvard, being the first African-American president of the Law Review there, or editor of the Law Review. And I looked up the book. There was a copy in the Springfield Public Library, and I believe it was page 86. It said he had used blow, which people tell me that's cocaine. So I ended up calling him on the campaign trail, and he admitted it. He says, "I'm really sorry I didn't tell you more. My life is an open book. You just read it." And I wrote a column about that. Nobody cared. This was after Bill Clinton had, you know, not inhaled a certain drug, yeah. And it just became a non-issue, but it was something that he apologized for not telling me the whole story when I first asked.
And and you've had other opportunities to speak with him since then, right? Where, I think anyone who's covered state government long enough, you have that experience where you're the only person who shows up to a news conference. It seems to have paid off, right? When he came to Springfield to give a speech early in his presidency, you got a one-on-one phone interview, at least, with him?
A phone interview. He actually was in, I think it was East Peoria, doing a Caterpillar event before he came to Springfield for an Abraham Lincoln Association dinner. He was keynote speaker to a very high-level event every year in Springfield. It was right after he got inaugurated. I also covered the inauguration, but I was just in the crowd there. A big crowd, I understand. But yes, through the contacts I had made, you know, with people like David Axelrod before, who I'd known since he was a Tribune reporter years ago. Anyway, an interview was arranged, and he did talk to me for about 10 minutes, and I did do a story, and you know, I think you were there, as you told me, across
a number of us were listening on the other side of the cubicle wall from your desk at the State Journal Register. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a nice, you know, I asked him some things about the future. I think Judd Gregg was a U.S. senator. He had asked to be in his cabinet, who had said no that day. Luckily, Ryan Keith, one of our columns, had said, "You should ask him about that." And I did. And that turned into a national story that he was just responding to someone turning down a cabinet position that day. And otherwise, you know, he mentioned people like Linda Hawker in Springfield, who was a former secretary of the Senate, who were good friends. It was some local stuff, some national stuff. It was the only time I've ever interviewed a sitting president of the United States. So it was kind of an interesting experience.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're doing something a little different with our Monday Reporters Roundtable today. I'm speaking with Bernie Schoenberg. His byline is Bernard Schoenberg, if you read the State Journal Register. He's a political writer and columnist there, and Doug Finke, state government reporter at the State Journal Register. They are both retiring at the end of the month. Doug, I wanted to ask you one of the things as you look back on your time covering state government. We were talking earlier today about the series of articles you worked on with colleagues. It ended up being collected in a book. I have a copy here. I realize it's not autographed. I should get that rectified. But it was called Illinois for Sale: Do Campaign Contributions Buy Influence? I feel like the title kind of answers the subtitle, but maybe you can talk about the genesis of that project.
The genesis of it, frankly, I wasn't the one who initiated it. I was part of the reporting team that worked on it. There were two of us in the full-time in the State House Bureau at the time, and we had another reporter on staff who I believe kind of came up with the idea in conjunction with our city editor at the time. And it was one of the first times that the state, at least the State Journal Register, involved in computer-assisted journalism. So we had a fairly new computer that we had bought, and we loaded data into it from the comptroller's office and from the Board of Elections. Comptroller's office was contracts that the state had let. As you can imagine, there are more than a few of them that had to be loaded in there. And the other from the Board of Elections, we loaded in campaign contribution data. And we matched them up to try to determine, what role campaign contributions played in awarding of state contracts, or at least the relationship between the two of them. Not necessarily that people could buy a contract, but, they would make, if they were the beneficiaries of state business, they oftentimes made campaign contributions to make sure that they showed their appreciation that way. It was an interesting endeavor because it was, even though we had a new computer, we would enter an inquiry into it, and we would then retreat to the break room at the newspaper for 10, 15 minutes and have coffee and what have you, while we waited for the computer to sort through all that data and come up with some answers for us. So was a little bit on the primitive side at the time. And yes, we wrote a series of articles. In fact, Bernie was part of this reporting team. And we collected them. They ran in the newspaper over a series of days, when we collected them into a book that I think at one point achieved something like being the 800,000th most popular book on Amazon.
Well, I'm proud to have done my part to make it maybe 7,999 or 799,999. We only have a few minutes left in our conversation, and I want to ask you about the changing State House press corps over time, right? You've both gone from, I think, you know, it's fair to say the typewriter era into the era when, you know, when you had to go request printouts of bills on paper and read them that way, to the era when, you know, anyone sitting anywhere, I'm hosting this radio show from my house, people can cover state government remotely now. Bernie, just real briefly, how has the State House press corps changed over the time you've been covering state government?
Well, unfortunately, there's a lot fewer dedicated reporters. And as you say, technology has had its pluses and minuses. The newspapers, particularly smaller ones, have reduced their staffs for a number of years. For example, you know, the Sun-Times used to have two people in Springfield for a long time. The Tribune at one point had three. And now things are, I think the Tribune still has one, but the a lot of stuff is done remotely. There's Blue Room Stream that provides video to all kinds of TV stations. So Chicago TV stations during the session, you'd get usually two or three and sometimes more reporters coming to town with camera crews and sound people wandering around the halls. And it really did increase kind of the presence of the media. And truly, I kind of love the format of the press conference with more people asking questions. And some of those Chicago reporters would ask really good ones that we would all benefit from. So there's less of that because people are covering more remotely more often because they can get the video they need or the audio they need remotely. And it's a shame. And there are some other groups like Capital News Illinois, which the Illinois Press Association Foundation is part of funding, which is good because it's filling some gaps. But local papers that used to send reporters, many of them don't. So you can do more remotely, but there's fewer people watching, and the outside help is welcome.
And we're gonna have to leave our conversation there. I want to thank Bernie Schoenberg, who is political writer and columnist at the State Journal Register newspaper in Springfield, and Doug Finke, state government reporter at the State Journal Register. And I just want to thank you not only for being here, but for being mentors to me in my time as a State House reporter, and for doing the work you've done. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you. It's been a privilege to do it.
Indeed.
More to come after a short break. We're going to be talking about Thanksgiving for the rest of our show today. Listeners, stay with us.